They've had enough and they're not taking it anymore. Four senior members of the Fargo Communications Department are leaving. They say they're being unfairly targeted. They've probably had enough in Minneapolis, where more than 100 cars were broken into just last night. And Americans have had enough waiting for lower mortgage rates. They're just going to go ahead and buy or refinance. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you for the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're here with you between 4 and 6 each weeknight, bringing you up to speed on what has happened throughout this crazy day. I know that for many of you, your day is just starting. And to you, I say, hope the day goes great. Hope you had a good night's sleep, day's sleep. Hope you had some good shut-eye and are ready to take on the world. And maybe this is a way for you to catch up on what happened while you were sleeping. Maybe your day is half done, the work day is half done, and you use this as a little bit of a break to catch up on the halftime report. Whatever the case is for you, I'm really glad that you're here with me. I don't take it for granted. Work very hard each day trying to give you a good and informative program to bring you up to speed on the world around us. Sometimes those things are right in our backyard. Other times they are regional, statewide, across the country, around the world, wherever they come to us from. I enjoy the, it's an honor, to be honest with you, and I enjoy the challenge of trying to take an entire world and condense it into a two-hour show. Some days we do better than the others, but we give it our best shot each day. Addison Loger is my producer, and he's the guy that does all the real work here behind the scenes, punching all the buttons, getting the guests lined up, and I do not want to ever take that young man for granted because he is fantastic. I was just telling somebody the other day, whatever that dude touches turns to gold. So, Addison, you're doing awesome, buddy. Thanks for all your work.
I try. Thank you, Steve.
And I have tried to do your job and mine at the same time, and it doesn't usually go very well. So
it's a little tricky when you're doing both at once.
It's a little tricky when you're trying to hit buttons and type things and route things at the time you're supposed to be talking to people. It is a radio program, after all. And since we're not a music station, we can't play tunes. I guess we can, but probably not the best use of our time. It doesn't exactly fit the mission statement. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. No major complaints from me. I'm enjoying the nice weather we've had today. It's not
good summer day.
Not too hot. It's not too cold. There's a bit of a breeze. Yeah. I'm liking it.
And the smoke isn't too bad, right?
I mean,
you can see across I-29 here, which some days it's hard to do that. That's good. We had a big crowd here for the teachers' appreciation picnic today.
That we did.
Holy smokes, did we have teachers.
I didn't get to partake in much of it because I had some other shows I needed to make sure ran well. Mm-hmm. But the parking I saw.
Oh, this might have been our best attended picnic that we've ever done for anything.
It looked like it
was,
yeah.
To be honest with you. 470 teachers or education professionals of some kind came today, got a free lunch, thanks to some great sponsors. And they brought a number of people along with them, spouses and friends and whatever, who may not have been working in education. So we have a head count on how many got a free lunch. So I've got to assume we were over 600 adults and, man, a million kids. All those teachers have kids, man. They have families, and they bring them all. And we had a ton of fun. Got to meet a bunch of people. I met one teacher today who's been teaching at the in North Fargo, Jefferson. Actually, Jefferson might be South Fargo. Anyway, Jefferson, she has taught there for 42 years. 42 years she's been loving our kids and making them better. And, man, was it fun to meet a lot of people today. And a few of them kind of leaned over and said, like, I know that you guys don't like everything going on with schools, but there's some good ones of us still out there. And I'm like, we know. There's way, way, way more, especially in the part of the world that we live in. Our teachers are the best, honestly. And our administrators, our staff, our principals are the best. No question about it. There's a few that we have questions about once in a while, but you can count them on one hand. And we appreciate them so dang much. And their world is about to get interesting. I talked to a couple guys today that were from the Dilworth School District, and they said that they were getting their classrooms ready to go, and this is sort of the calm before the storm. But they said it's not really calm either because we're doing all the different things we do to ramp up. So what a day it was, and we were reminded again today how lucky we are to have the great teachers and education professionals in our part of the world who are going to give our kids a great experience this upcoming school year. All right, 4:11 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is time for the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire, catching you up on a busy and eventful day. We start with the almanac for today. August 13th, the year of our Lord, 2025. The average high for today is 82. Average low 58. Record high 102 back in 1984. Record low 33. How about that? It could have snowed on this day in 1964. Come on now, 33. Holy smokes. 6:22 was our sunrise today. The sun was set at 8:40. If Addison and I want to get anything done after work these days, we got to hustle. Because the sun is going down quite a bit earlier. We'll lose 2 minutes and 56 seconds of daylight today. Another fantastic day on Wall Street. The S&P 500 closed at another record high. So did the NASDAQ. The Dow rallied 400 points as well. Dow up 463, S&P 500 up 20, NASDAQ up 31. Why? I'm not sure that I can tell you, to be quite honest with you. There were some good earnings reports today. There was an inflation report that came out, we talked about yesterday, the CPI report, and seemed like there was a little bit of a lag in people knowing what to make of that. But as people are eyeing up what's going on here, they're saying the same thing that I've been saying, that it's hard to find sinister inflation out there. Anything that will really create a problem. And Scott Bessent was on a couple of interview programs yesterday saying that he really thinks we could have a half point rate cut in September. Now I sit up in my chair. A quarter point doesn't do a whole lot. It really doesn't. But if you get a quarter point in September and then another, or excuse me, a half point in September, another quarter maybe in November, that's enough then to get people off the fence. There are a lot of people that are just kind of waiting. Buy a car, take out a new loan of some kind, business loan, but the rates are still high and people are saying, I just need something to get me going. Mortgages, they're figured out a little differently, but could be some of that as well. There have been good earnings as well. We've talked about that quite a bit here in our program. And this whole AI revolution, they've numbered these different industrial revolutions. This is like the fifth or the seventh or something like that. But a lot of rules go out the window during times of massive and chaotic growth. And that's what we have here in this artificial intelligence space. And sometimes you just have to go with it when the market and the tape is telling you, we're just going to go higher, dude, whether you like it or understand it or think it should happen. And we're starting to see some rotation out of the big tech into some other companies that are doing pretty well. And with the AI stuff, remember, you've got all of the components companies, the pipeline companies, the utilities, people who make steel, people who make circuits, all of those things that go along for the ride when you're talking about these AI data centers and the explosion of AI. So lots of things going on in the market today. WTI crude oil today down about 40 cents or so, 62.74. I feel like we should be getting a pop in oil, but we're not so far. Shows you what I know. Gold today pretty much unchanged at 3,400 an ounce. Silver, $38 an ounce. Not much change there. Bitcoin today, here we go. I was kind of hoping Bitcoin might, you know, get a little 10% correction in it, get down to like 108, 107, something like. If it would have gone under 110, I got a couple of bucks and I'm ready to do it, but it didn't. It did not go down very far, and now we're at new record highs. Money's pouring into them, the Bitcoin people buying, and then the ETFs that kind of mimic their performance. And so Bitcoin up about $3,100, say $122,880, and I don't know. We may be off and running. There will be a pullback sometime. I just don't know how far we go before we get one. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas, $3.15 a gallon nationwide. North Dakota's average price is $2.90. South Dakota is $2.99. Minnesota, $2.93. In the diesel category, unchanged from yesterday at $3.71. All right, we got a whole bunch of stuff to tell you about. Kind of in this big conversation we've been having about what's happening in Fargo with crime in the metro. We're not just talking about Fargo. Recently, we've had some Moorhead stories. I've had a little bit from West Fargo, but it's a lot of Fargo stuff. Well, we found out today that the victim that was attacked during a downtown Fargo assault on that, I don't know what you want to call it, the night of ill repute, I guess you could just say, that night when everything went haywire, that victim has died. This was the one, a 55-year-old man, took injuries after a beating. Now, we didn't know right away if it was a stabbing, shooting, or a beating, but now we know it's a beating. Severely beaten in downtown Fargo. Same night, those two deadly shootings passed away earlier today. And there's some court records now that have been released on this. And the man was has been in the hospital since that Saturday night with those life-threatening injuries. We've known that from the beginning. Police have found and arrested 19-year-old Tobias Walker, who is, they believe, responsible for this crime. He appeared in court today. He faces a maximum 10-year sentence. He apparently used a skateboard in the attack. And so there could be a minimum sentence of 4 years without parole because he used some sort of an implement in the what we now know is a beating. A Fargo man who was initially detained for possible burglary was later arrested after making threats toward children. Here's a happy feel-good story for you. This happened last night around 7:40 p.m. Andrew Barrett was detained by authorities after they responded to a possible burglary. The homeowner did not want to press charges, but officers say that since Barrett was yelling and screaming at the officers, they stuck around a little bit to make sure that he was no longer a threat. While he was walking away, he screamed at multiple people and threatened to kill a young child and his friend. So Barrett is now under arrest for terrorizing a child victim, and he was arraigned earlier today. So it's just something new every day, right? At least nobody got hurt or killed there, but how traumatic for the kids. I guess I shouldn't say nobody got hurt. Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner says he paid a visit downtown to take a look and see what happened during bar closing last weekend, late Saturday night, August 9th. And he tells our news team that he was really disappointed with the lack of respect that he saw for law enforcement. Now, this is not usually what we hear about in our part of the world, but he went down to check it out, tagged along with some Fargo cops from 11:30 till 2:30 the following morning when the bars closed. He said, just myself alone, I think I was called an effing pig three different times. He said, very different to what we typically hear, but he said this is apparently typical for downtown behavior. He said, I've never really seen that before. It was eye-opening for me. I talked to Jesse. He was walking through our building today, and I said, hey, question for you. Did you feel like there was a good representation of Fargo police officers? He said, yes, there was a ton of them down there. And I'm like, okay, good. So I know Chief Zabolski has been saying we are going to beef up the number of people we have down there, and it looks like that is happening there. So there you go. Johnner's going to go back again, he said, next weekend and check it all out. Thought that was interesting. Four people, including the city's communications chief, have resigned from Fargo's communications and governmental affairs team. Greg Schildberger, the chief communications officer, deputy chief comms officer Katie Edish, and two other supervisors announced they are leaving the department effective on Sunday, August 17th. So they're going to finish working through the week. Valley News Live says that they know more now about the reason for the investigation that we were first told about by Dave Pepcorn here a little while ago last week. The reason for exactly why the people left, we don't know about that, nor do we know if they felt like there were legitimate complaints against them. We just know that they resigned there. But the records that they have at City of Fargo that have been requested by Valley News Live show that the complaint against them was filed by a producer, Zoe Bologna, I don't know, alleges poor leadership and a hostile work environment, and it names four employees, including Schildberger and Katie Edish, the chief and the assistant chief there. And so the whole thing was about that. That was the reason for it. Now, I don't know if that's what led them to leave. I really don't know. I have said for some time that there are too many people in the communications department, but I've always found them to be helpful and cooperative when we've needed them. So, but there are now not 12, there's 8 in the department, I guess, after Sunday. Forum reports that Moorhead doesn't want to be left out. A Fargo man was arrested earlier today after he allegedly robbed an acquaintance at knife point in a North Moorhead apartment. Happened about 1:40 a.m. The victim did not have any physical injuries, reported the suspect, who was known to the victim. And the suspect, identified as 49-year-old Deshaun Jones, fled the scene by jumping out of a second-story window. A canine was brought in. They tried to find him. They found the knife that was reportedly used in the robbery. It was seized at evidence. And Jones was later found about 5:30 a.m. and brought to the Clay County Jail, where he is being held on several charges, including felony aggravated assault, robbery, assault with a dangerous weapon, and assault on a peace officer, and obstruction. So it must have been a bit of a scuffle when they were taking him in. In and of itself, you guys, this story is not a huge one. Neither is the guy who was threatening the kids. But, boy, isn't your radar up right now about crime in the city? I don't know. Maybe these stories don't matter too much or don't interest you. I'm really interested. What the real story is like? What's the real story in our metro area right now? North Dakota leaders are meeting today with Energy Secretary Chris Wright. He's in Grand Forks today. Julie Fedorchuk, Kelly Armstrong are here, are at the meetings. Senators Kramer and Hoeven are also there doing some roundtables. So I put that in because I think it's just cool that we've got cabinet members that are coming to our state. It's good to have friends in high places, and we have them. In Minneapolis, more than 120 cars were broken into overnight, and there are no arrests. About 125 cars broken into, mostly smashed windows. It's been a troubling trend, they say, in Minneapolis. I don't know. Every one of these stories, they end up talking to somebody who's sweeping up broken glass. Yeah, my car got broken in. What do you do? I don't know. I guess this is just the way it is. And I think Donald Trump telling people during the convention, it doesn't have to be this way, right? That you've been told you just have to settle for all this. There's nothing that can be done about it. And here's Trump in D.C. trying to change that. Another piece of good PR for Minneapolis, I say that tongue in cheek. The city of Minneapolis makes the list of the top 20 cities in the country for fastest growing inflation. They are number 11 on this list. Number one was Seattle, followed by San Diego. Three is Tampa, four St. Louis, five New York. Minneapolis, number 11. So you got broken windows and you got high inflation there. So yikes on all of that. CNBC reports today that people are tired of waiting for low mortgage rates. They're just going to do it anyway. Average 30-year fixed rate came down last week from 6.77 to 6.67. That was enough to get people off the fence. Applications for a mortgage to buy a home rose 1% for the week and were 17% higher than the same week a year ago. So there are some things happening here. And applications to refinance a home loan, which I thought was really interesting, jumped 23% for the week. 23% for 1 week. So not sure exactly what happened last week, but that's what's going on there. A couple of sports notes to finish it out. If you're a Twins fan, bad news for you. The Pollad family is taking the team off the market. They are not going to sell it. They will remain the principal owner of the Minnesota Twins. They say, we do want to win. Honest, we do. I don't know if there was a lie detector test being applied at the time, but I would have liked to have seen the results of said test. And the forum reports today that NDSU's women's soccer team is the preseason favorite to win the Summit League championship. They won it last year, and they're looking to win back-to-back Summit regular season titles for the first time in school history. They went 6-1-1 in the league last year, 10-5-4 overall. And those, friends, are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Wednesday afternoon. When we come back, a Fargo State senator says he will not attend the governor's groundbreaking for the new state mental hospital in Jamestown. He says we're doing it all wrong. We'll talk about it next. Fargo State Senator Tim Mathern has made it clear that he is not going to the groundbreaking ceremony for the new state hospital in Jamestown on Monday. He sent a letter to Governor Kelly Armstrong, said, I appreciate the focus on mental health, but he said that the decision to build a new centralized state hospital undermines the goal of getting the right kind of mental health care to our citizens and actually disregards intent of existing law. He said the model for a centralized location is shown to be both ineffective and harmful. So that's one reason. Number two, he said it ignores modern evidence-based practice that if you have people in more community settings, they'll make greater gains in putting them in institutions. And he says, I also believe it contradicts state law. So Senator Mathern has a different perspective on this. And I would like to get him on the show to talk a little bit about this because I don't say it flies in the face of what I have heard, but I'm not sure that it completely makes sense. There's some people that have to be institutionalized for some amount of time, right? I mean, if you get somebody who's, I'll just use the term certifiably insane, for lack of a better way of saying it, outpatient and community, community-based integration or something like community settings. So look, there's some people, yes. I mean, whenever possible, right? We don't want to have people in locations where the state has to pay for it. First of all, and second of all, it may not be the best thing for them, but to say that we don't need a state mental health, there's only 140 beds. You're telling me there's not 140 people in the state of North Dakota that should not see the outside world, at least for a while? I don't know. I thought that was interesting. We'll try to get Senator Mathern on the show. I thought that was a very interesting perspective. 4:32, Steve Alstrom Show. We've got a lot of things coming yet before the top of the hour. We're going to talk to Robbie Loft, the executive director of the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library, coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, we have a check of news and weather, starting with the news. We are now a little under 1 year away from opening day. July 4th, 2026 will be the big day out in Medora where the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library will open. And what a sight that is going to be. I've had a chance to follow this story from the very beginning to the selection of an architect to put together this design and all of the discussions about how it was going to come together and how to preserve the ecology and the wildlife and all of that. And here we are now, just a little under 1 year away from the opening day. Robbie Loft is the executive director of the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library, and he's been kind enough to give us a few minutes here on the show today. Robbie, the last time I saw you, we were in Oklahoma City. You gave me a neat little lapel pin. I have it on my desk now, I get a chance to take a look at it once a day as we get ready for something really cool to begin here about a year from now. How are things?
Steve, things are fantastic. I will note you got to toss that on your lapel when you're out and about.
I probably do.
but we can get you another one. We can get one that could just sit on your desk and one for your lapel.
Yeah, there you
fantastic.
Go.
Calling you from the beautiful Badlands, sitting in Medora here as we continue to be, as you said, less than 1 year away from the grand opening of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, July 4th, 2026, a day that will be one of the proudest in North Dakota's history as we celebrate the life and legacy of one of America's greatest presidents.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty incredible day.
What is the building? What is the campus? What does it look like right now?
So we've got our 93-acre site on top of the same butte on which the Medora Musical stands. So for anybody who's been to the Medora Musical, and if you haven't, make sure to get out there. We are a shared campus on top of a butte just a little west of town. Where our 93-acre site, which is once U.S. Forest Service land, is currently under construction. We're about 70% of the way complete of the building. If you drive up there, you can see the substantially completed structure and the beautiful green roof as we grow the plants and vegetation of the roof of this 100,000-square-foot facility that is blends seamlessly into the Badlands. So it's a pretty fantastic, incredible site to see. I tell people it's worth getting there before it's open to see the construction site and see the technological and architectural marvel that we're building. You know, if you don't love Theodore Roosevelt, if you're not into conservation, if you're not into American history, you still might want to see this building because it's one of the 100 most interesting buildings in the world. And we hope when you're there, because you love the building, you learn a little bit about Theodore Roosevelt and the greatness of his American story and the lessons that we should all take from him on citizenship, conservation, and leadership. So it's an incredible facility. Let's just say every day it changes dramatically. They're paving the brand new road up there as well, and it's all, we're on track and on budget.
Well, that was my next question. Are you making progress as scheduled, and are we still thinking July 4th of next year we'll be ready to go? It sounds like the answer is yes.
We're booking. It's let's just say July 4th, 2026 is the goal, and we're well on our pace to make it. And we're excited to have invitations out for an incredible facility. And I would just say it's going to be a year-long celebration of this grand opening. So, you know, don't think if you can't be there July 4th that that's the only time to celebrate. No, the first year is the entire celebration. So we recommend everybody make sure to plan their Medora summer trip around a visitation of now one of 16 incredible presidential libraries across the country. And frankly, it will be the most incredible of all of them. And I'm not even biased. I mean, this is going to be a facility that will be a place that kids drag their parents to, not just parents dragging their kids to, like the old Dusty Museum. So it'll be an incredible adventure gallery where people can engage with and learn from TR, not just about him.
Tell me a little bit about the perceptions that you have heard going around the state. I don't know that I remember anything else. I guess I wasn't in Fargo when the Fargo Dome was built, but probably since then. I don't remember another project that was as polarizing as this one has been. Some people love this idea, and I'm one of them. I've been to two presidential libraries, and I know what they are. I know what it means. I know that it's not what you think of with a library. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a really, really good asset and an amenity for our state. But then there are people who are very much opposed to it, and they say, you know, I know that the state didn't like directly spend money, but we put this $50 million aside and that we could use for other things. And this is just more big government, more waste. I hear that. I don't hear much in the middle. Like, people are either really excited about it or they won't have anything to do with it. What has been your reaction as you've traveled around and listened to the reaction and perspective?
Yeah, well, I've had the good fortune of being involved in this project for 10 years now, from its inception back at the Dickinson State University campus. And I'd say it's, you know, I understand that perception. I would push you on that, old Steve, that I think as the project has gone and grown and become more of a real project that people can see and sense is going to happen, frankly, lately, I don't get anything other than excitement from people that we are going to have a world-class institution that we can bring our families to. In the conception up to this point, I think there was a lot of skepticism of whether or not it could get done. I think there's a little bit, you know, it's a $450 million museum, which I will note, you know, that's the price of George W. Bush's presidential library in Texas 10 years ago, you know, the not accounting for inflation. You know, the Obama presidential library is well over $1 billion. Let's just say I don't think President Trump's a small builder. I think he's going to go pretty big. You know, we like to think this is a presidential library and institution worthy of the size and stature of Theodore Roosevelt's legacy. So we're building somebody to that level. And I think there was rightfully a little skepticism of whether that could be done. What I would say is I'm a big believer that in North Dakota, we can do anything that can happen anywhere else in the world. And I couldn't be less surprised that the state of North Dakota and the benefactors of North Dakota and the people of North Dakota have come together to make this possible. And how we've raised over $340 million thus far from benefactors. I'd also note, if you look at museums across the country, we are currently 11% of our funding has come from public sources. Many incredible institutions like the Science Center and Bismarck are 60, 70% publicly funded. The Minot Science Center, all these other museums. I think there's I have a strong belief that I hold passionately that America needs more American history right now, not less. I think we can see what happens when people don't know about the greatness and stories and histories of America and the things we can learn from the mistakes we've made and the triumphs we've had. And I think this next generation of citizens need to hear about people like Theodore Roosevelt, who saw America as a global force for good. So when you tell that story, I think it's really well received. I've spoken to, 100 Rotary clubs, hundreds of chambers of commerce. And all I get is, wow, we are so excited and we are so proud. This is good. Going to be in North Dakota.
Okay.
That being said,
okay.
I mean, of course, I understand there are legislative discussions and things, but I'll remind you, too, when it passed through the legislature, you know, I think we got 70 plus votes in the House and a House of 94 and a 35 votes in the Senate, and a Senate of 47. So those would be what we call overwhelming successes.
Yeah, so those are pretty good numbers for sure. Question for you, Robbie. How do we make sure that once this gets up and running, that we're able to support it, that it can be modernized when needed, the upkeep, the maintenance, and all of that? How do we know that we're going to be able to maintain it, you know, put a new fresh coat of paint on it once in a while, things like that that will need to happen certainly over time?
Well, certainly one thing we should do is once we have these public institutions of run by nonprofits, I would say I'd love if thousands of North Dakotans across the state join as members, make it a part of their annual giving, you know, pay the, I believe it's $160 or so a year to make, get yourself a family membership where you can visit as many times as you'd like and go and see it and utilize it. You know, it's our goal to have hundreds of thousands of people each year go and stop by the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library like they do the Medora Musical, like they do the National Park, like they do Bison football or UND hockey. It's something that we can all be proud of and embrace and support. We also are fundraising to make sure our endowment is of the size and stature that can fund a global institution. And we'll constantly be, you know, this is an incredible endeavor that has been wildly successful thus far. But, you know, we need to tell our state story and attract more people to the state, not less. One of my, I love the state of North Dakota. I'm a North Dakota is the number one thing I describe myself as. One of my least favorite things we do as a state is we embrace the save the best for last in our tourism campaigns sometimes. And I'm like, no, do not save the best for last. Tell your friends this is the first state you need to go visit. You need to get to the Badlands. You need to go see the store, the place that changed TR. He said he wouldn't have been president if it weren't for his time in North Dakota. He also said if he could only relive one period of his life, he would live his time in North Dakota. That's an incredible story to tell. So I want to, you know, change the paradigm, kind of like our friends down in South Dakota did when they embraced Mount Rushmore and the Black Hills and said this is a place worthy of global visitation. And by the way, America needs more North Dakota, not the other way.
Well,
we need
you're
a lot
right
more
about
the
that.
Things we offer.
Yep, you're
so if we
right
get more
that.
People to the Badlands, I think we're going to have a better country.
Is there, let me kind of dive down maybe one layer deeper in the last question I asked you. I just want to make sure that I understand, can we, when the thing gets going, are we going to have enough to pay for all those things? Well, do we believe that you talked about the memberships and obviously admissions and all of that, but what is the model for making sure that we can meet the expenses so that it isn't something where we have to go to the legislature in 3 years and say, gosh, this isn't working and we've got to underwrite it now in a different way statewide? How do we make sure that it's self-sufficient financially going forward?
Well, you build, well, it's a nonprofit museum, which they nonprofit museums usually go off of a mixture of revenue from tickets, you know, really to get in the business model, which maybe is a little too in the weeds for everybody wanting to be, but it's ticket revenue, it's events revenue, and then it's usually endowment revenue. So it's making sure we fundraise to the capacity where our endowment is large enough to, because this might shock people, but, you know, museums aren't meant to be large for-profit institutions.
Right.
Like they are
right.
They're meant to be a public good that supports people, supports a mission. And, you know, I think science museums, I think history museums, I think we need more of them in the world, not less. Yeah. You know, our goal is to grow the endowment through philanthropy. Our goal is to increase visitor revenue. But if you're asking me, can I guarantee you, before we've sold a single ticket to the museum, it's like we're not even open yet. Our goal is to make sure we tell the story far and wide through things like your show, through marketing, through word of mouth, through, you know, people adding it to their visitation to Medora, and making sure to stop up and see this world-class museum. The one thing I can guarantee you is if you come, you're going to come back, because this is a museum of Smithsonian national level being built in beautiful Medora, North Dakota. And while we have incredible museums like across the state, you know, I think this will be something that will be a game changer for this place. So we want to, you know, there are 800,000 people a year that go to Medora. There are 2.9 million that go to Yellowstone and 3.1 million that go to the Black Hills. We take a 10%, you know, drag off either of those two other places and increase it. Let's just say, Scott, you won't be talking about, oh, we're spending too much money on tourism in the state. You'll be seeing the benefit of investing in places like Medora because it's going to increase and diversify the economy.
Yeah, makes sense. Not the first time that I've been called Scott, by the way, so we're good on that, right?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
That's terrible.
Big deal. You and I are both very good friends with Scott Hannon, so no big problem there.
I literally just got out the phone with him.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you do talk to Scott way more than you talk to me, so I get it. I do want to ask you about the thing that I've kind of been most excited about here is that there is a tradition that when these libraries open, the living presidents who are still with us do typically attend these things. Have the invitations gone out yet, Robbie, for next July?
Let's just say we are proudly inviting all presidents to come to the grand opening of the Presidential Library, and we're very confident that in the first year we're going to have incredible visitation from all of them. Of course, we did pick a very special date, America's 250th birthday, Steve, that was selected because All of America is going to be sitting around the grill watching TV, celebrating America, and they're going to go do cuts from D.C., from a parade going on there, to New York, to Faneuil Hall, to Philadelphia, to L.A., and then they're going to cut to Medora, North Dakota, the ribbon cutting of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. What an incredible opportunity for North Dakota to be seen by hundreds, and Medora specifically, by hundreds of millions of people all at once. So we may not have them all there at the exact same moment on actual groundbreaking, but you most certainly can believe that we're going to have a lot of – it was very incredible to have Vice President J.D. Vance here in Medora 1 year to the day of the grand opening. Let's just say that wasn't a coincidence, Steve. That was, you know,
okay.
I think the eyes of the world are on Medora. And I have a great feeling that we're going to have a visit from our current and former president.
Yes. And Trump can do his MMA thing on the lawn some other day. It doesn't have to be on July 4th. Come on, Prez. Let's get with the show here.
I live in a world of abundance. I think our presidents can do all of the above.
Well, really big plane. There are airplanes. Yeah. No,
he's got a
no
pretty
doubt
fast
about that.
Plane.
Yeah. I believe that he does. Yeah. Well, it'll be a treat no matter what happens and whoever gets out there. But, yeah, that is one really cool part of the thing. It's good to be North Dakota right now, isn't it? Doug Burgum is in the cabinet.
It's always good to be
Chris
North
Wright
Dakota.
Is in North Dakota today, meeting with the governor and the senators and Congresswoman Fedorchuk. It's like North Dakota's kind of cool right now, and this sort of adds another log on that fire.
And let's keep it going, man. You've been telling this story for years. Let's the word's out, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah,
you
know, well, no better place.
The world needs more North Dakota.
You got that right. Yep, very good. And the world needs more of Robbie Loft's energy and excitement, because every time I see you, got a smile on your face and got a sparkle in your eyes. So we appreciate
that. Might
you bringing
be because I'm
radio
seeing
today.
You, friend.
Yeah,
I
well, I'd like to take some responsibility for that, but I think it's probably just who you are, but it makes for really good radio, so we like that for another reason.
Robbie, I'd love to come back.
Thanks for being here. We'll do it again soon. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Thanks
yep,
so
Robbie Loft, Executive Director, Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library. When we come back, speaking of good things happening in North Dakota, one, North Dakota Police Department is using AI to do the job better and faster. I think they're onto something. We'll tell you about it next. Neglected to mention that our visit with Robbie Loft brought to you on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. The Bismarck Police Department is putting in a request to the city council. They believe it will be approved to have an AI platform that lets an officer create a narrative through their body-worn cameras. And that narrative can be uploaded into a report-generating system. They say it saves about 20 minutes per report, and they generate more than 10,000 reports in a year, and that saves a lot of time. So the American Civil Liberties Union has opposed police departments' adoption of software products that use AI for report writing. Not sure why they would be not on board with this. This seems to be kind of the wave of the future. And they also have different areas where they can take their reports and put in a shared platform that other law enforcement agencies can tap into. So they may be able to help share information with Fargo Police or Dickinson Police or Minot or whomever that will give intelligence-based policing a really good run out there in Bismarck. So AI hitting the law enforcement areas as well. So thought that was pretty interesting. And it's probably been put in place and being tried many other places as well. Top 5 of 5 coming up next. Also a visit with Jay Thomas. Steve Hallstrom Show continues right after this. Here we go. Hour number 2 of the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Wednesday afternoon. Good to be with you here till 6 o'clock tonight. We got a whole lot of ground to cover before we close up shop here this particular day. The Steve Hallstrom Show, this hour of it, is brought to you in part by StyleSafeFargo.com. That's StyleSafe Bath and Shower. StyleSafe Bath and Shower. They're locally owned, more than 1,000 jobs completed since opening in 2010. They are the former luxury bath and aging-in-place remodeling company, if you're familiar with them. They are the experts in tub-to-shower conversions, veteran-friendly, lots of experience working with the VA. And the CDC will tell you that more than 20 million adults a year are injured in the bathroom. And the number one place that people have issues is stepping over the bathtub and falling in the bath and the shower. So you got to start with the bathroom. That's why Style Safe Bath and Shower is the place to call. StyleSafeFargo.com. If you want to stay in your home for a little while longer, you got to make it safe. And they can definitely help you with that. StyleSafeFargo.com. Well, usually at this time of day, we have Jay Thomas walking in the door, my buddy from the other end of the hall. But I must have made him mad today because I don't see him. And it's been a crazy day. I know there's been a lot of interesting news going on. And so maybe he's needs some fresh air to clear his head after all the whatever. I know we'll sneak Jay on here maybe tomorrow or something like that. So we'll get him here one of these days. I had a chance to Jesse Johnner was in our building here a couple minutes ago, and I had a chance to ask him a question that came in on the text line. Steve, does the sheriff's department supersede Fargo City Police in the hierarchy of jurisdiction? And I saw Jesse in the hallway here in the break. I said, hey, how about this? And he said, well, technically, yes. He said, technically, the Cass County Sheriff's Office is the highest ranking agency in the county of Cass. He said, but in reality, it doesn't really work that way. We work together on different things, but he said the only way that there would ever be something like that that would happen where he would, quote unquote, try to pull rank is if the city of Fargo was being horrendously mismanaged and nobody was doing their job and things were completely getting out of hand. Then you could pull a Trump in D.C. thing, you know, and say we're coming in here and we're going to run things for a little bit or whatever. But he said I have had a good working relationship with Zabolski, and we've teamed up on a lot of different things over time, and so he said we work together on a lot of stuff, and we will continue to do that. So there you go. I would imagine that anytime you get, you know, people doing what Jesse does and people doing what Dave does, they're going to have times when they don't see things eye to eye, and they're going to have a little bit of a, you know, difference of opinion on things. I would think that certainly happens. But I asked Jesse about, you know, how the cooperation has been, and he said I didn't ask it that way, but he said, yeah, we work together on a lot of stuff, and things are always busy, certainly in the county. So I appreciated the visit with Jesse a couple of minutes ago. So, all right, 5:11 here on the Steve Hollister Show. Let's go to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line and see what we might have here on the phone line today. This is Jay from West Fargo, I believe, on line one. Good afternoon, Jay from West Fargo.
Yeah, hey, Steve, longtime listener, first-time caller.
Was it something I said?
I completely forgot it was Wednesday, dude. I'm listening to you drive home. I'm like, oh, no.
All good, man. All good. What was the big, while I have you, what was the big talker on the Jay Thomas Show today? What are people buzzing about?
Dude, I brought up the Viking male cheerleader.
Oh, yes.
Holy smokes, man. Yep. Wow. Wow. And people weren't so, what people really seemed to be upset about was that it was being reported that this Blaze is the, you know, he's the lead cheerleader. He's the head of the squad. And people are like, wait a minute. Is this, you know, the DEI stuff all over again? How does this guy just mm-hmm. get on a cheerleading squad and override everybody else? But that's not true. He is not the lead cheer on that team. And a little interesting side note, Blaze is from here. He was a Fargo South graduate. Cheered in high school, then went over to NDSU.
It made it big. Yeah, so there's a social media video going around that the Vikings put together, and this Blaze is like the first kind of cheerleader in the video. So I think people are making some assumptions based on that,
yep.
that he's the head. And this is typical, like, Minnesota sports team stuff. I don't know why they do this. Is like the Dylan Mulvaney of the NFL thing now, and like, why are they doing these things? If you've got the guy on your cheer squad, it's one thing to have him, you know, doing a routine as part of the gang. It's another thing to put him at the front of the line so he is like the most conspicuous cheerleader prancing around there. This is what they've done. I don't know, they just continue to do these crazy things.
Yeah, they just don't learn. And he's not the only one. There's another male cheerleader on the squad. But there's seven teams last year in the NFL that had male cheerleaders in that actual cheering, you know, role.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But are these people that I'm going to get rid of my season tickets? No, you're not.
No, they won't.
Come on.
No,
you're not
they
getting
won't.
Rid of your tickets. That and I had Sheriff Johnner on, who you're just referencing to. I had him come on and talk about a couple things. The first one was I got a lot of messages yesterday from listeners after the Moorhead Police Department's press conference, and we found out that three Fargo officers were fired their weapons to people. Well, what the concern was, if you remember back in 2021, we weren't sending North Dakota wasn't sending any law enforcement backup over there because there was concern about during that legislative session about the way they were writing up the rules for, I guess, what you would want to call engagement when law enforcement has to use their weapon. So they wanted that. Jesse had fired off a letter to the governor, and that ended up getting changed. So the law enforcement felt comfortable about sending their officers over there. So they're back to doing that. So there's no concern that, you know, that AG over there, Ellison, who definitely is not a fan of law enforcement, yeah, these guys are going to have any concerns. That's not going to be an issue. And then Jesse talked about, you know, he decided Saturday night to grab a couple deputies and just scope out downtown to see what it's like down there on a Saturday night. So he was down there from 11:30 to 2:30 in the morning.
And good for him.
He said it was pretty eye-opening. A lot of disrespect for law enforcement. He said a lot of derogatory terms being thrown. You know what them terms are. A lot of people flipping the police off down there. So it's just like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I visited with him a minute ago here, and I said, how many, were there a fair amount of Fargo cops down there? He said, yeah. He said, I was actually really happy to see that. There was a good share of Fargo police out there trying to sort of keep the peace. But he said, you know, when you got thousands of people and, you know, whatever, 10 cops or whatever, it's still a pretty tough numbers game. So it sounds like they're at least doing the right things, getting some people out that way. So that's good to have.
Yeah, and Chief Cebulski had said at one of them press conferences that, you know, back in, I think it was mid-July, that they upped the amount of officers down there. But what's interesting is I'm glad Jesse came on, because I was told that there's only two officers down there. And, you know, Jesse's like, no, that's not true. There's plenty of officers down there.
Yeah, well, you got to. And thankfully, they're starting to put a few more people down there. So they're figuring it out and getting the people where it needs to go. And who knows, maybe it's just a couple months in the summer where things get a little goofy, and then from that point on, things settle down. I don't know. I did notice, and you probably did today too, that there were two more crime stories out of Moorhead. One of them was a guy yelling at kids. I guess that's not great.
Yeah.
But the other one was an armed robbery. So it's like it's something every day right now in this town. My gosh.
Well, that and, you know, West Fargo Police, you know, kudos to them. Another pit maneuver. That's number 11 on the year. We're keeping tabs on the Jay Thomas Show. Another pit maneuver last night, and West Fargo Police pit the car. Car hits a tree stump. Car flips over into somebody's front yard. But here's the thing. If you remember, the Forum did an editorial a couple weeks back chastising West Fargo for their policies on chases and pit maneuvers. You know, hey, you know, these aren't dangerous people. Who's getting pitted? Well, come to find out, this 30-year-old and the girl in the car, she had a warrant, and he had multiple warrants out for his arrest in Cass and Clay, and I believe they were felony warrants.
Mm.
So kudos to that. But here's the kicker to this story, Steve. So I'm looking at the story, and in the comments, the gal out here in West Fargo whose yard the car flipped over in, she had posted pictures, said, hey, it was my yard this happened. And there's glass all over the place, and I'm concerned because I've got four young kids.
Ooh.
Well, West Fargo Police Department saw that post, Steve, and responded to her immediately and said, Chief Nielsen knows of the situation. He will have community service officers over there this afternoon, and they will clean all that glass up for you.
There we go.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that's well done. Yeah. Good work. Hey, Before I let you run here, brother, I got to ask you about this Trump kind of mobilizing the National Guard in D.C. Your audience is not really a political audience as much as they are like what makes sense to average people. Does the average person, you think, believe that what Trump is doing in D.C. is a good thing, or do they think that it's an overreach from the federal government?
I think most do, and if you saw the story, what's funny is behind closed doors, you have people on the left that, you know, whether they're on TV or they're politicians, they want to rip apart Trump. They're going on TV ripping about him federalizing Washington, D.C. when it comes to law enforcement. But now we're finding out behind the scenes, and the person that's talking about this, surprisingly, is Joe Scarsborough, is saying, yeah, these people are coming to me off camera behind the scenes saying that they're glad he's doing this. You got to do it. I mean, and at first I went, what are you doing here, President Trump? You can only do this for 30 days. These criminals are just going to lay low for 30 days. And then once you guys are out of there, it's going to be, you know, back to green flag racing. But it sounds like President Trump has found another loophole. This guy's a genius. If Congress doesn't act to allow him to keep this the guard and others in that city for more than 30 days, he can use the the Emergency Whatever Act. I can't remember what it's called, and he can keep them people in there.
Oh, okay. Well, so, they might need it. I mean, 30 days is not going to change things. I've got to think that if you just walk down the street in D.C. and asked 100 people, do you like the fact that there is, you know, National Guard, even if they're carrying, do you like the fact that they're there or not? And I've got to think most people are like, this is great. I can, like, go out to supper and not worry about getting mugged, and nothing's going to be perfect, but it's got to be better than what they had.
Well, look, yesterday alone, the guard helped with 23 arrests of some pretty bad people.
Yeah.
So it's working. It's working. Trump ran on many things, and one of them was law and order, and we're going to get our cities back.
Yeah.
And I love that he's doing this whole, he's starting a Gestapo police. No, he wants people, like you said, Steve, to be able to walk down to the corner shop and get an ice cream with their kid, or drive their car and get out of their car and not worry about getting mugged and carjacked or stabbed or murdered. And the homeless, they already wiped out 70 homeless camps there because he said, look, here's your options. Either you come to the homeless shelter where you can get drug and alcohol addiction help for free, or you go to jail. It's time to we got to stop coddling these people. It's got to end. These cities, these big cities, they look like they're infested with zombies.
Mm.
And it's scary and it's sad. This is America, and this is not what we're about.
Well, this guy gets stuff done. Here we are 2 days into this experiment, and already I didn't know the thing about the 70 homeless camps. I did hear Caroline Leavitt talk about the 23 arrests that happened. So 2 days in, you got 70 homeless camps cleared, 23 people off the street who are criminals. And just think, if they do this for 30 more days, what they're going to be able to have as far as a case study on, okay, people at D.C., do you want more of this or not? You should, because this is, look at what we did in 1 month. It doesn't take this guy long to fire stuff up.
No, it doesn't. And even the mayor now is coming out going, yeah, you know what? And the chief, yeah, we could use the help. Yeah, you can use the help, chief, because you've been so ruthless, or not the chief, the mayor, you've been so anti-police, you're down 800 police officers.
Isn't that something? I saw that. 4,000 is what they should have. They have a charter to have 4,000 officers, and they're a little short of 3,200. I heard that same number. That's insane. How are you going to be any good at that? That's whatever, 20% short. How can you do your job when you're supposed to be, you know, four people, you got two? I mean, come on now. This is like or two and a half. It's like there's no way you can do this. And if there's no law enforcement, I know that some people will argue just having cops on the street isn't going to make a difference. It will. It absolutely will, because then people are going to go a little further out to, they'll go to another city. And, you know, the job of the police and the mayor of Washington, D.C. isn't to fix the world or solve the world's problems or solve the world's homeless situation or the country. Their job is to take care of D.C., and I hate to say it this way, but who cares if they go somewhere else? If you're running D.C. and they're not in your city, then you got to win.
Exactly. And if and the other cities have to look at that and go, okay, well, if DC is cracking down, they may end up over here. Well, we better crack down.
Absolutely.
It's a domino effect in a good way.
Absolutely. I just hope that the people of these cities that maybe never, you know, liked the Republicans or Trump or whatever, I hope they understand that this party on the left, the and I'm not saying that it's every Democrat. North Dakota Democrats still seem to have it figured out pretty well. But boy, the radical left right now, they want to protect people that are going to commit crimes. And because of that, they sacrifice the safety for every law abiding citizen out there. And it just can't win. It can't work. And I'm so tired of hearing, you know, Joe Biden shrug his shoulders for you. Well, there's not much we can do. We can't do much about it. It's about as good as you could hope for. You'll have to take it or leave it. And Trump says there's nothing we can't fix in this country. We're way better than that. I just love that we have a president now who's not scared of taking on a challenge.
Well, yeah, and remember that was the mission statement from Biden and from Harris and that whole crew. Hey, lower your expectations. No, we're not lowering our expectations. This is America. We're not putting up with this. We're not a banana republic. We're not a third world country. We're not doing that. And I don't like you, the radical left. I don't understand in their crazy minds how they think that backing illegals and backing criminals, how they can win on that. They live in a fantasy world where they must believe that there's that many Americans out there that feel the same way they do. And they're wrong. But you know what? Keep pushing that narrative, because that guarantees you are not going to get in or stay in office.
It's the money. I think it's the money, Jay. I don't know if they even care if they win the elections. I think they know there's money behind these ideas from, you know, Soros is the one everybody talks about. I don't know who they all are, but there is money that is being pumped into these campaigns for people that want you to stand up for the things that they have organized as their list of what's going to make a good society or their social experiment or how they make money or whatever. And I think it's more that. I think they feel like if there's enough money there, they can trick enough people into going with it. And these politicians, I feel like they feel it's going to work out well for them in the end, some way, somehow, Nancy Pelosi stock trading or whatever. So I just think that it's really all comes down to the money. So, all right, my man. Well, hey, I appreciate kind of calling in. We did this impromptu on the phone, but it worked just fine. So thanks for checking in. We'll see you next week on Wednesday, maybe.
It always works on the fly, brother. Yeah, like I said, I'm driving. I'm always listening to you driving home, and I'm like, oh, that's right. It's Wednesday.
It is Wednesday.
Wow, it was a crazy day today, too, with the unbelievable turnout for the t-shirts.
Oh, it wasn't that fun. Oh, yeah. Yep. A ton of people. It was a good time. All right, my man, be good.
All right, you too, brother.
Jay Thomas, the one and only, checking in here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, show break for us. We come back to top five at five. The five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. It looks like the Fargo Communications Department got shrunk by about a third today. We'll talk about it next. Time for the top five at 5:28 here today. Here are five stories that I believe you need to know about today. Story number one. Remember that crazy night of crime a couple Saturdays ago? Two people got shot. Another one got attacked and beaten. We didn't know if it was a beating, a shooting, stabbing, whatever. Well, we found out that it was a beating, and the victim has died. So three people died on that night in Fargo. This was a 55-year-old male victim, sustained injuries during attack shortly after 3 a.m. Sunday, August 3rd in downtown Fargo. The man has been in a critical condition with life-threatening injuries, multiple facial fractures as well. Arrested now, 19-year-old Tobias Walker. And Tobias is facing charges that would carry a 10-year maximum sentence. Apparently, Tobias beat this 55-year-old man with a skateboard. The skateboard was used in the attack. And so 10-year maximum sentence, but he would have a minimum of 4 years without parole because he used a skateboard in the attack. I don't know about you, but if you didn't know what the sentencing rules were, and you heard Addison beat Steve to death with his skateboard, and Steve died from the injuries, what sort of punishment do you think Addison should get? and you said, how about 4 years? Wouldn't you say, what? If you beat a guy to death, you know, shouldn't that be like 10, 15, 20? But this is the way we are. I look at all these punishments and I say, okay, 4 years. Yeah, 4 years isn't great. I understand that. But, man, don't we need to have a stronger message being sent about things like this? So Walker has been arrested now and appeared in court today. But that 55-year-old man now has died. So that's story number one. Story number two, and then there were eight. Flag Family Media has learned that four people, including the city's communications chief, have resigned from Fargo's communications and governmental affairs team. Greg Schildberger is one of them. He is the chief communications officer. The number two, Katie Edish, also resigned, and two other supervisors announced that they were leaving and they were going to be resigning on Sunday. So they didn't walk out. I might have said earlier they walked out. They didn't do that. But they said, basically, we've had enough. There is an investigation that we know about. Valley News Live has done some digging on this, and it is stemming from a complaint filed by a member of the communications team named Zoe Bologna. And the complaint alleges poor leadership and a hostile work environment. So this isn't just, you know, they don't play my kind of music here. This is something quite a bit different than that. And I don't know if it's this that set these four off. We don't know. We've not really received or heard any statements from them about why they decided to resign. But that's the nature of the complaint or the investigation that has been going into the communications department. I've always thought maybe 12 was too many people, but I don't know that I ever had professional problems with them. Whenever we've called, usually it's Katie Edish that we work through to get people on the air, and she was always responsive and helpful in getting that done. So I don't know what the story was like behind closed doors, but I guess two concerns. Number one, they're just kind of coming under fire, I think, on the budget side of things, and I think they were going to lose one staff member there. And then this complaint going on as well. So a couple things going, and these folks have decided, you know, we're just kind of done with it. We'll go do something else for a living. Story number three comes from the Cass County Sheriff's Office. Jesse Johnner has given his account of going downtown during bar closing last weekend. The sheriff says he was disappointed with lack of respect that he observed for law enforcement when he went down there, tagged along with Fargo cops from 11:30 until 2:30 in the morning when the bars closed. He said, just myself alone, I think I was called an effing pig three different times. He said that was light compared to what some of the other officers were getting with things being said and gestured toward them. Two things come out of this story to me and the why it matters. I asked Jesse, okay, did you think there was a good contingent of Fargo cops down there during closing? He said, absolutely. He said, there was a ton of cops down there. I'm like, great. I think that's notable because it hasn't always been that way. And when you have more cops, you got a better chance of defusing situations and all of that. The second thing is, good on Jesse Johnner. He didn't have to do this, right? But here's a guy who probably should be out watching a movie with his wife or riding his bike or whatever. And he's like, no, I'm going to take my Saturday night and just go down there and see what's going on. That is leadership right there. And that is doing more than you have to, seeing what your people are going through, because the Cass County Sheriffs, they do go down there and help with things from time to time. And just wants to know what the scene is down there and try to understand better what's happening. And I really like that. I don't think most sheriffs would do that. But he did, and I applaud him for that. So that's story number three right there. Story number four comes to us from Minneapolis, which I know is not in our backyard. But many of us are from there, go down there for things, and there's a couple little black eyes that Minneapolis has taken here in the last 24 hours. They have had a rash of car break-ins where just, you know, crowbar to the windshield and just knock out the window and see what you can steal. Well, they had at least 125 cars broken into last night, mostly through smashed windows. And investigators are continuing to search for suspects. So we've got that going on. And then the other piece of it is that a new study by WalletHub shows that Minneapolis has the 11th highest inflation rate of any city in the country. Now, let me go back to the crime piece for just a minute here. There are, in this day and age, and with the technology that we have, there have to be 80 million cameras in Minneapolis. Maybe not everywhere in Minneapolis, but in most places. There's so many cameras, property cameras, traffic cameras, city cameras, all of that, that I'm surprised that there's not more of a deterrent with that. But apparently there's not. The other thing I would say is it's unreasonable to say that in a city as big as Minneapolis that you can have people in different places that will be able to effectively patrol the whole city. Now, they have done their best to vilify cops down there, so I'm not surprised they don't have enough. But again, this to me gets back to, if you don't have any other options of how to stem crime, then you're going to have more people on patrol going around to just be proactive out there. And obviously, you can't have a cop standing on a street corner and just sitting there waiting for something to happen. But patrols, I mean, car patrols, I wonder these neighborhoods where the car break-ins were happening, how often there is a cop that drives through there. And look, it's an imperfect world. There's no easy answers to any of this, but we've got to change something. And that's where I think we just need more cops, you guys. We do. We need more jail cells, and we need more cops. And neither of those answers fixes the root cause of the problem. But the root cause of the problem is going to be really hard to fix. I think that's basically impossible at this point. So you got to do a few things here, and make sure that you got enough cops, enough jail cells, enough good judges, enough good laws. And finally, CNBC reports that the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage went down last week, 6.77 to 6.67. But that's not why I brought this story into the top five at five. The application percentage, or the application rate for refinancing a home loan, jumped 23% last week. So applications on home refis jumped 23% for the week. That is a massive increase over 1 week. Why is that? I don't know. The story I'm reading from CNBC, they don't really give you a great answer, but they say that there's three things going on. Number one, people are just tired of waiting and they need the money. Okay, I can see that, right? I mean, the default numbers we're seeing on credit cards, car loans, and all that are going up through the roof, as they say. So at some point you say, what am I going to do? I need the money. I've got equity in my house. A lot of people have equity in their house because home prices have gone up. They're like, I don't love a 7% mortgage, but maybe if it gets down to 6.67, you say, close enough. Let me just do it. So you got that going on. The second thing I think that is going on here that I'm reading in this story is that people are getting into adjustable rate mortgages. The old fixed 30 is kind of the standby. But if you can get into an adjustable rate mortgage, that percent goes down to about 5.8. So you can take about a full percentage point off of your adjustable rate mortgage. And these days, if you think that interest rates are going to go down, which a lot of people think they are, then an adjustable makes some sense if you got to do it. So you've got that part of it going on there as well. And then the third piece of it, I guess I touched on it a little bit earlier, but the number of people that need money is getting higher, and the wealthy are doing fine, but the low to middle income, probably that 50%, that lower 50% on our economic scale, are the ones that are really getting hit the hardest. They need money, and you know, to pay off debt or take care of things that they need to do. And maybe if your credit card is maxed out, or if it's sitting at 18%, you say, well, maybe this is the way to do it. Now, there are home equity lines without refinancing your whole mortgage, but maybe people need more money than just what the equity line would give them. So those are three areas that you know, could be a part of this whole story, according to CNBC. And those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle day. We call it the top five at five. All right, crime is down. You hear it everywhere from city leaders all across the country, but in D.C., they really have no idea, or if they do, they're not saying. You know who is saying something? Famous people in the left-wing media are saying maybe this isn't such a bad thing what Trump is doing. We'll talk about that next. DJ Colter and the American Family Insurance Agency would like to remind you that the turning of little claims in for your auto insurance policy, those days are over. You need to be a claims manager of your own account. Try to take higher deductibles. You probably need to raise your deductible. Think about it. You can't get a repair done for $500 anyway. So save yourself a little money. Raise your deductibles. It'll keep your premiums down, and basically you're going to self-insure the small stuff. You'll come out ahead. DJ Colter, American Family Insurance Agency, they provide these kind of tips and that kind of advice. Give them a call at 701-235-6641, 235-6641. That's the DJ Colter, American Family Insurance Agency. If Democrats lose the big liberal media, they are in trouble. And right now, it's been interesting to watch what big liberal media is doing in regard to the D.C. crime situation. As you know, President Trump has basically said, we're taking over the D.C. Police Department and bringing in the National Guard. Hundreds of National Guard troops now on the streets of Washington, D.C. It would be one thing if the Democrats just wouldn't even talk about this on their programs, but that's not happening. They are talking about it. And people who you would not expect to ever support anything that Donald Trump ever said or did are saying, you know what, this makes sense. This is MSNBC's Anthony Coley, and he's telling you his perspective on what he sees.
And I live in Washington. This is personal for me. Many people are frustrated with crime that we see, particularly committed by juveniles in the city of Washington. People are frustrated, Willie, that they, when they go to CVS to buy deodorant, that they have to get it from behind locked plexiglass, right? The response here, and you know, let me say this, right? These are not just random anecdotes. What we see in Washington Post polling, among others, is that roughly half of D.C. residents, mostly half of D.C. reps, view this as a serious problem or an extremely serious problem.
Mm-hmm. Joe Scarborough, no fan of Donald Trump, was on air yesterday, and he had a text message from someone who lives in D.C. He says, this is a very liberal friend of mine who lives in the city.
And I want to read you a text from someone who, I won't say their name, but they're, we'll just say that they're very liberal. And he says, this may sound controversial, but I'm not totally opposed to Trump's National Guard move in D.C. I know he's doing it for politics, but crime remains rampant. I've had too many friends carjacked, shot at. None of us will walk more than three blocks after 8 p.m. 13-year-olds are committing many of these crimes. Quite a change from a decade ago when things were much calmer. Well, that actually sounds like the D.C. that I lived in when I lived a block behind the Supreme Court. And, you know, every 3 days, one of my neighbors was getting held up at gunpoint. I mean,
okay, so are you hearing what is being said here? This is one of those things that you thought you'd never see. Joe Scarborough reading a text from a very liberal friend who says, I'm not totally opposed to Trump's National Guard move. None of us will walk more than three blocks after 8 p.m. Too many friends carjacked and shot at. And then another MSNBC contributor talking about, we're tired of having to go in and go have somebody open up the plexiglass so we can buy a jar of deodorant or whatever. So if you're the Democrats and you lose MSNBC, I don't know where you're going to go next. And this is what happens when you stop listening to people that say, you can't do that, you can't do that. There's no way that that'll ever work. That's too big of a job. You'll never get the payoff from this. Donald Trump says, I don't care. And he might be doing it for politics. I don't know. But he's not going to pick something stupid. He's not going to pick, like, let's all just run through the streets naked for politics. He's going to pick things that he thinks will work and that Americans will like. And funny, people like being able to walk more than 3 blocks after 8 p.m. I thought that was interesting, thought you'd enjoy that, so play a little bit of that for you here today. All right, when we come back, this day in bad journalism, you can find it wherever you want to go. You really have to skip past the headlines, friends, and read the full story. Another example of that comes up next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, we got a couple more minutes to finish up here on the program today, and I did want to take care of a couple things before we wrap it up today. I have entitled this next a story, This Day in Bad Journalism, because we see things like this that happen every so often, and you really have to look past the headlines. This is from a CNN story, and their headline is 2.4 million people could lose SNAP benefits under Trump plan, CBO analysis says. Now, SNAP is the food stamps, a supplemental nutrition assistance, whatever. We call it food stamps, right? Well, you see this headline, and right just after we finish talking about, well, maybe the liberals don't hate everything Trump does. Well, they still hate most of what he does. And 2.4 million people could lose. Oh, a terrible man. Who would do that to anybody? But and this was a Congressional Budget Office analysis that was released on Monday. And they go on to explain the reason that 2.4 million people could lose benefits is the law requires some people to work for their food stamp benefits for the first time. Huh. And it goes on to say that, you know, parents of dependent children, if you're 14 or older, you got to work, right? The 14-year-old can figure out how to handle themselves at home in most cases, right? There's medical exceptions or whatever. But when you read headlines, these headlines are designed to be a shot of emotion that hits you without you understanding the story. You have to read these stories. You cannot go by. If you did that, you would have thought from CNBC that there's no chance that the country's going to live through Trump's tariffs. And here we are. We had tens of billions of dollars come into the country. And prices, while they are up in certain areas, it's not anything you can't get past if you go to the grocery store. So you just have to get past the headlines and look at the real story there. All right, I apologize to everybody who sent text messages today. We've had a ton of them. Steve, it'd be interesting to see if business picks up in D.C. in this month that the Guard is there. 100% right. That will be really interesting. Be a story that we'll be following here in the days ahead. Until we meet again tomorrow, 4 o'clock, have a great night, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.